Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 184, Working with Families and the Courts, November 28th, 2008. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
And really, it's taking a step back. And if a couple is, let's say, fighting over that you've accused me of hitting my child, I've never hit my child, I would never hit my child, and so, no, you have because they came home with a scratch on them and a bruise, and so I know you've hit my child. And what happens is that there can be a huge conflict, a he said, she said dilemma. And if you can take a step back and look at, well, what are the attachment issues here? And is one parent having maybe fear attachment issues, the other parent criticism and ridicule attachment issues, and how are those playing out in this post-divorce relationship?
That was the voice of my guest, Dana Schneider, who is a marriage and family counselor in private practice, a longtime lecturer in psychology at Sonoma State University, and one of my former students. In addition to 29 years of clinical experience working with children, adolescents, and their families, she has extensive training and experience in the field of divorcing families. She served as a special master for the Sonoma County Courts. As a member of the Collaborative Council of the Redwood Empire, an organization committed to a non-adversarial resolution of divorce-related issues, she's committed to helping families through this often contentious process. Along with a group of experienced co-parent counselors in Sonoma County, Dana has implemented a new approach to working with high-conflict families called the Co-Parent Project. She's a co-author of a published article in the Journal of Divorce and Remarriage entitled Children's Ability to Cope Post-Divorce. Now, here's the interview. Dana Schneider, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you.
You and I have known each other for a long time, right?
Yes, a very long time.
One of the ways we know each other is that you have been teaching as a lecturer in the psychology department at Sonoma State University. How long have you been teaching there anyway?
I've been teaching there since 1994, so, 14 years at this point.
Wow.
And actually, as an undergraduate, I took several of your classes when you were first there.
That's right. And you were working for us, I think, for a number of years before you brought that to my memory, and I didn't even realize that. So it was kind of a surprise to me. So
yeah.
I must have done an okay job, since it doesn't seem to have impeded your career.
No, in fact, your abnormal psychology was one of my favorite classes.
Oh, great. So what other courses have you taught for us other than abnormal?
I have taught behavior and emotional problems of children, psychology of the family, learning and behavior, child development, adolescent psychology, introduction to psychology. I've kind of been around the map.
Boy, I'll say. Now, I said abnormal. Actually, I taught abnormal. Did you ever end up teaching it?
Yes, I actually taught abnormal for several years, fun class, actually through the intercession course also.
Okay, well, great. Well, may it continue despite all the budgetary constraints of California going broke.
Yes, yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, well, you've developed a couple of very interesting specialties over the years that I wanted to explore with you. And I believe one is a co-parenting project that you're involved in. The other is something called collaborative practice. Let's start with the co-parenting project. First of all, what do you mean by co-parenting?
Well, co-parenting is a different type of counseling, working with two parents who are parenting from different households because of separation and or divorce. And what we do as a result of helping parents navigate the world of conflict resolution, setting up supportive parenting capacities, boundaries, rules for their children, just a form of communication to help families increase their communication even though they are parenting from two different households, which we know through the literature that this is very helpful in helping children adjust to post-divorce environments.
So tell us more about the co-parenting project, because I gather there's some kind of special elements to how that's structured.
Well, there are many of us in this community that are very committed to alternative dispute resolution processes. And unfortunately, what we see in the court system is many families litigating oftentimes issues regarding either vacation, or it could be parenting issues or school issues or custodial issues. And what we found is that certainly if we can help these families resolve these conflicts in a more cooperative and joint way, this certainly helps the children. So what we did is that we began to think about some of these very high conflict families who would litigate oftentimes issues over and over and over again in the court system. And what we discovered was that oftentimes we as co-parent counselors, being the single co-parent counselor in the meeting room with these families, would oftentimes be essentially just trying to put out the flames while the parents were maybe fanning the flames. So we came up with an idea of what about if we paired up a co-parent counselor with each of the parents to really help contain the boundaries in the co-parenting sessions, to help soothe and support each parent as they might get emotionally reactive to some of their obviously passionate feelings and perspectives they might have on issues regarding maybe soccer, maybe custodial schedule, possibly even dinner plans, who's going to be the child's medical doctor. And we felt like this was a really excellent way of trying to help these oftentimes very litigious families resolve their conflicts.
So it really starts to sound like co-co-parenting.
Yes, absolutely. Excellent.
Or co-co-parenting.
Or co-co-parenting.
Yeah, you could give them co-co because each of the parents has a co-counselor in a sense.
Yes. Each of the parents has a co-counselor. So that person can meet with them individually out of the four-way meetings. That person can also respond to maybe some of their reactions and responses. We set up the structure so that we meet for oftentimes an hour and a half with the parents, so the two counselors and the parents, and then do a debriefing with the parent individually. Each individual counselor meets with their person, and then we debrief, the therapist debrief. And that way, we also do some active planning for the next session.
Well, it sounds like a fair amount of work.
It's a lot of work. There's oftentimes a lot of coordination, oftentimes communicating with attorneys, trying to help support them in helping the couple stay out of the litigious process. But I think so far we've been keeping some statistics from how we're doing, and so far it seems to be a cost is not as big a concern as we initially thought. Some of these families are not necessarily completely stopping their litigation, but the litigation is at a much lower level than it had previously been. So in other words, we're having fun and and trying to help these families, again, navigate their parenting.
Are these families assigned to you by the court?
What happens is that we started out by having a meeting with the family court judges here in Sonoma County and, you know, just kind of saying, would this be a program that might be helpful and supportive to you? And they were very, very supportive of us getting started on some new creative ways of resolving conflicts with these particular families. And so at this particular point, most of our families are court-ordered to attend, which means that they have presented themselves in front of the judge for some reason or another, and the judges and or their attorneys have all agreed to send them to the co-parenting project. So we will get them court-ordered through the judge directly, or sometimes we also get them through family court services, which is the first stop for families who are having a difficult time resolving issues around custody arrangements. And some families are self-referring, but mostly they are coming through the court system.
Well, when they're referred by the courts, do you find them to be particularly resistant? Are they resentful? You know, they're coming because somebody told them to come.
Oftentimes, you do have some reluctance, one might say, for these families to come into the court system, or excuse me, come into the co-parent project program. But for the most part, they are really pretty experienced in the litigious world. They've oftentimes spent lots and lots of money so far in the litigious world, and oftentimes they see the project as maybe a bit of a ray of hope. And I've heard from many participants in this particular project that they are just so glad that we're doing this, that it's the best thing that they've ever done, that they really see the benefit of it. Not necessarily that all of the conflict is eliminated, but at least we are, you know, making some inroads in some of the concerns that the family is having. For example, I'm finishing up with a family this week that I and another co-therapist of mine have been working with for probably about the last 6 months. And at the prior session, she was adamant. She was not coming back. This was no help. It was no use. It wasn't going to help her ex-husband agree to allow the children to play soccer, that there were lots of ways in which she was really disgruntled with the program. And then I talked with her today, and she's speaking about all the things that have been a benefit and how she's willing to move forward. So again, people get very reactive and upset in the moment, but oftentimes they really do find the value in this way of trying to resolve conflicts.
That's excellent. Are there any theoretical roots for this approach that come to mind? For example, I'm thinking of family systems therapy, Virginia Satir. Have you drawn on any particular school of therapy in this work?
Well, clearly the roots of this are looking at all of these families from a family systems approach. And I think that that's really essential, that we understand the homeostasis of the family system and how when something is off balance, off kilter, that obviously the family system activates itself to try and rebalance itself. So there's always an attempt for homeostasis. Unfortunately, with these highly conflictual families, this homeostasis process also contributes to a difficulty with any kind of conflict resolution. I think the other theoretical approach that I have really been taking a new look at, David, it's just really so interesting to me, is looking at some of these really deep injuries that parents are continuing to play out in their post-divorce relationships, and that these injuries are really attachment-based. So if we look back at Bowlby and some of the work that Bowlby's done with attachment and some of the new attachment theorists, particularly I like Sue Johnson's work, where she is a new couples therapist who is really looking at ruptures in relationship as really being attachment ruptures, and how oftentimes in a destructive way couples can play out those difficulties between each other.
Has she written a book that our listeners might be able to find?
She has. Her most recent book is called Hold Me Tight, which is really an excellent book, particularly for couples, and also just getting a preliminary understanding of her approach to this kind of conflict resolution. And really, it's taking a step back. And if a couple is, let's say, fighting over that you've accused me of hitting my child, I've never hit my child, I would never hit my child, and so, no, you have, because they came home with a scratch on them and a bruise, and so I know you've hit my child. And what happens is that there can be a huge conflict, a he said, she said dilemma. And if you can take a step back and look at, well, what are the attachment issues here? And is one parent having maybe fear attachment issues, the other parent criticism and ridicule attachment issues, and how are those playing out in this post-divorce relationship?
Well, I'm not sure I know what you mean when you talk about fear attachment issues or ridicule attachment issues. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, for example, if we look at a child and their primary parent when they're little is their mother, their father, maybe both mother and father, and that we either have a secure attachment or an insecure attachment or an anxious attachment or a disorganized attachment. And so what we're looking at is that to help a child feel safe and comfortable is that when they are hurt or upset or afraid or fearful, that the parent soothes them and calms them down, helps them feel safe and secure in the world. And if for some reason that particular child didn't get soothed in an adequate enough way and then grows up into an adult who is very fearful in the world, very scared, maybe feels easily injured by verbal accusations, then that child who then became an adult may respond as if they're a child, and that they do what she talks about, which is this kind of protest, which creates a conflict between the other person. And the other person may have been, let's say, neglected or ignored. So when they
feel the other person being the other parent.
Yes, okay. Yes. So they might feel ignored or, say, unattended to as a child or unresponded to. So when they feel ignored or unattended to or unresponded to as an adult, then again, that may activate their attachment fears or concerns or upsets.
So if I follow you, then when these parents were children, they may have had some difficulty, some attachment difficulties because of fear issues or ridicule issues, etc. And then later when they're parents, their issues interact with the other parent and somehow also get passed along to their offspring.
Right, right. And what also, it fuels oftentimes their continuing conflict. And, you know, again, with these high conflict families, we do sometimes see some personality disordered folks. Mm-hmm. And so those are, you know, people who really do have early experiences of ruptures in their attachments. So, and, you know, difficulties in some of their early relationships also. And then what happens is you see these oftentimes conflicts acting themselves out in the parenting relationship. For example, another example of a family that we've worked with, or a type of a situation of a family that we've worked with in the past, is that one parent may want the other parent not to attend the school activities of the child because they don't want to be around the parent that they're getting triggered by. Well, this creates, again, abandonment issues, loss of connection with the child issues for the parent that's being requested to not attend these school activities. And this can become a huge conflict between the family, one that they might feel so strongly about that they actually take to litigation to get a judge to decide whether or not mom or dad is allowed at the child's school activities.
Mm-hmm.
So see how oftentimes small resolvable problems can get to be very huge problems.
Yes. Now, when you were talking about this Sue Johnson book, I got the impression maybe that you not only draw on it for your own edification, but do you also assign it to the parent sometimes?
Yes, I definitely assign that to parents, as well as also Patricia Evans' book, The Verbally Abusive Relationship. I find that that book is very, very powerful in understanding oftentimes more subtleties of verbal abuse. And again, oftentimes when we hear the words verbal abuse in connection with these families, we think of, oh, yelling, screaming. But verbal abuse can be very subtle process too, of avoiding, demeaning, disregarding, lack of response. And oftentimes, again, that makes parents very, very nervous when they're dealing with their children if they're not getting responded to by the other parent. So that's another book that I use oftentimes with families also.
Excellent. I know some of our listeners are either graduate students or professionals, and they're always looking for good tips. So I'm sure they'll be writing down some of these titles that you're mentioning.
Now, oh, that's great. That's great. They're really good books. I'm really excited about some of the resources out there.
Yeah, that's great. I interviewed someone for my Wise Counsel podcast series on something called parental alienation syndrome. And I think it might be relevant to your work.
Excuse me, David.
I'll try to remember to send you something about that.
Right, yeah, parental alienation, oftentimes we have, these cases are really fraught with quite a bit of parental alienation, and that's where one parent kind of actively campaigns the child to reject the other parent.
Exactly.
Yes, and actually a very good colleague of mine and I are working on several alienation cases right now that are in this co-parent project program, and they're very tough. It's very tough work. Joan Kelly down in Marin has done significant research in the field of parental alienation and also looking at it on a continuum. She is with the Northern California Mediation Center, and she's also a really good resource down there.
Okay, and this person I interviewed has written a book. I'm blocking on her name and the name of the book, but I'll send that information to you, and any interested listeners can go to the Wise Counsel podcast site and do a search for parental alienation. I'm sure it will come up.
Right.
Now, you talked about the kind of the co-counseling role of having a counselor who meets individually with each of the parents. I noticed that you also, in this approach that you've developed, you have something called the child consultant. What is the child consultant and what's their role?
Well, you know, again, oftentimes these families have concerns about timeshare plans. And when we're talking about timeshare plans, it's like, what's going to work best for the children? Will Susie, who's 7 years old, be able to do overnights at Dad's? Will John, who is 14 and wants to predominantly be with his friends, be better off on a week-to-week schedule, or what really works better for the children? And so oftentimes it's very helpful to bring in somebody to meet with the children, and not that we want to convey to the children that they make the timeshare decisions, but we like to bring their voice into the co-parenting process, because again, oftentimes children are wonderful reporters of what is happening in their families, and they're very often able to help us articulate what really is going to be best for them, because they can share their thoughts, feelings, and experiences. So oftentimes when we have a child consultant, and then that consultant will come into the meetings and present the information to the co-parenting team as well as the parents, oftentimes it ends any kind of previous roadblocks that we might have previously experienced.
So the child consultant would be yet another therapist who has met individually with the children, and then rather than bringing the children into the session with the parents, this therapist comes in and sort of acts as a representative for the kids. Is that right?
Exactly. And this therapist also has expertise in working with children, understands the divorce process, the divorce literature, and, you know, the impact of divorce on children. So really has a very good, solid understanding of how to talk with children about these sensitive issues and bring that information into the co-parenting project. One of the other things that we have done as team members is that sometimes it is helpful for just the co-parent counselor to meet with the child. For example, several weeks down the road, we met with a 15-year-old son who was having some concerns about what was going on in his family, and the parents wanted a read from him about how he was feeling about the impending schedule changes. And so rather than the parents asking him, and then that plays on the child's loyalty conflicts, what happens is that if the co-parent team can talk with him and check in with him, and we're both neutrals in this situation, just supporting what's going to work best for him, oftentimes it really helps him open up a communication and get, you know, good information back to the parents, obviously with the child's permission.
Okay, I think you, in the beginning, I think you spoke about some of the advantages of this approach. What are some of the pitfalls?
Oh, boy. Some of the pitfalls, I think, are the pitfalls, David, that are just inherent in this kind of work, no matter what you do. And that's that, again, oftentimes, unfortunately, the marital issues continue to get played out in the post-divorce relationship. So if there is significant hurt, trauma from the relationship, revenge tendencies, sabotaging tendencies, that's clearly a pitfall. And, you know, again, it's trying to help the parent get unleashed from their trauma or their conflict for the benefit of the children. And, you know, sadly, with many of these cases, we aren't successful because they're so entrenched in continuing their conflict. So I think that's a sad, at least negative for me, is to saying and maybe having to realize at some point that maybe we can't help this particular family because they're too entrenched in continuing the dysfunctional patterns.
Okay. Now, throughout, you said we and us. I gather that there's a practice group of marriage family therapists, psychologists. How many people are on the team? How did it come together?
We have 7 people on the team right now. We started out with 6, and we are a mixture of licensed marriage and family therapists, licensed clinical social workers, and licensed psychologists. All of us, you know, combined have probably hundreds of years of experience working in this field. Most of us have been doing this work for 28 plus years, many of us over 30 years. And so we kind of long-time community folks, and we just happen to work really well together. We like each other. We have to continue to perfect our skills of cooperation and communication amongst each other, and it's just been a really supportive, good team of people who we've really worked together well and have enjoyed getting this off the ground. We started this in 2005, and we are sailing forward.
And I guess I should, you know, bring in a personal note for you. You are married, and you are a mother, right?
Yes, yes. David and I have been married for 28 years, and we have 2 children. I have a son who's 25, and he's down in Los Angeles, and I have a daughter who's 21, and she's down in San Luis Obispo. So, yes, we've worked very hard at trying to do our family well, too.
Yeah, so you know something about what you're talking about here from a from a firsthand point of view. Now, the other thing that you're involved in is called collaborative practice. What's that?
Collaborative practice. Now, collaborative practice is, again, a way of resolving disputes in an open and respectful manner. This is different than mediation. It is different than litigation, but it basically takes the pluses of litigation and the pluses of mediation, combines the two, and again is another very positive, creative, collaborative, and alternative dispute resolution style. One of the characteristics of litigation is that you know each have your own attorney. The problems with litigation is that it's set up to win, and you go to a third party, and the third party makes a decision for you, which is a judge. And mediation is set up where two parties go to a single mediator and try and work out the conflicts themselves. Whereas collaboration, each party has their own attorney, yet the attorneys have agreed to work in a collaborative manner. They have also signed stipulations and agreements to not go to court. In fact, if the parties at any point want to go to court, the attorneys have to decline from working with their particular client. So it's really set up to protect the non-adversarial approach to working with families, which is really taking off here in Sonoma County, and there are so many professionals, financial specialists, child specialists, coaches, attorneys, probate, civil, and family law cases that are beginning to work with families in this form.
Do you need particular licensing or certification to do this work?
Well, each of the professional categories, like, for example, financial professionals have their own licensing and certification. Attorneys, obviously need to be, attorneys, licensed as attorneys in the state of California. And then marriage and family therapists or psychologists, each of us working as coaches within the mental health end of the collaborative process, each of us has our own separate license. So, yes.
Okay, so help me to understand a little bit about how you would work then. You've got two attorneys in the room, I guess. You've got the two parents in the room. You're there. What are you doing? What's your role?
That's a very good question, David.
Good.
and sometimes it really varies. Sometimes I'm doing a lot, and sometimes I'm not doing too much. But basically what a coach does in that particular role, so that's the mental health professional. What a coach does is really kind of a process monitor. For example, you can imagine when families are beginning to talk about their financial lives, their children's lives, that emotions can get very strong, very passionate, and oftentimes, they're in this environment because they are divorcing, and it's an opportunity for them to have some pretty significant conflicts. So what we would do, mental health professionals at that particular point, is we have met with our, person that we're working with, our parent, and we might help point out that maybe it's time for a break. We might help talk about the feelings that are being expressed in the moment. We might suggest new, more productive ways to say something. We might practice really active listening skills with the clients. So essentially, you're using all your therapeutic skills, but you're using it in a forum to accomplish the ultimate goal of getting this task done in a non-adversarial way.
So since you're trying to avoid court, do you ever end up going to court with your clients or on their behalf?
As part of the collaborative process, the whole collaborative team signs an agreement, including the parents who are involved, that if for any reason either one of them chooses to litigate any of the issues, that none of the information in the collaborative process, nor can any of the collaborative professionals go with them. So in other words, they would have to hire all new attorneys, new therapists, new co-parent counselors, anybody involved, new financial specialists. That is how strong the commitment is from all of these professionals and obviously from the parties who are signing up for the collaborative process to really say this is not a healthy way or a good way to resolve these conflicts is to litigate. So it really does take the oftentimes the temptation to try and get a third party to make a decision for the family, and really empowers the family to keep the decision-making process part of their life and their world, so that they are the ones making decisions about this rather than others making decisions for them.
And is this process court-ordered, or do people really come to this somehow on their own? They hear about it and they just come to it.
Yes, this is not court-ordered. This is completely voluntary, and the parties oftentimes are seeking out new ways of resolving differences and conflicts. And this can, you know, be extrapolated onto probate, civil issues. So, you know, again, there's a lot of potential. Who knows, maybe the world's next, you know. So,
I gather you're a big fan of collaborative practice.
I am definitely a big fan of collaborative practice, and not just collaborative practice, but forming all kinds of alternative dispute resolution styles and ways in which we can help people come to peaceful resolutions of conflict.
Yeah, we live in such a litigious society, don't we?
We really do. And but I think in part because really we haven't gotten the word out that there are other options. And that's why a podcast like this, or, you know, other ways of helping people really understand that there are new and excellent ways of resolving conflicts that we hadn't thought about before. And one of the positives about collaborative is that what we have here is that we do have an attorney attached to each party so that they can, you know, really get their legal questions answered, but everything is transparent. You know, there's not a filings for, you know, gathering information. It is just agreed upon from the beginning. We're going to supply all the information. We're going to be completely open around all the assets, all the, you know, information around the children that we may need to come to a good decision.
And does this approach end up saving the parties money?
You know, at this particular point, what we've seen is that we have seen that a collaborative can save families money. Now, there are collaborative cases, too, that have been expensive. But what we see, I have some information here about what we see is that oftentimes with litigation, we are anywhere from $20,000 to $30,000 more in expenses.
Okay. Now, I have the impression that there are a lot of therapists in our particular area here in Sonoma County who don't have as many clients as they'd like. How's this been for you from a business point of view?
Well, this has been a very successful business venture in many ways, and I think any kind of specialization that therapists do is really the key to a successful business. Mm-hmm. And this has clearly been a area that I have, dove into, done lots of trainings, gained lots of expertise through going to different workshops, reading the literature, keeping, you know, up on this. And there are a handful of us who have specialized in this area. So for me, it has been very, very successful, and it's, I think, in part just because I also love the work and feel like if I can help a family in some small way, then that's going to filter down to helping the children. And that's really where my heart is, David.
Mm-hmm. And again, for those would-be therapists, how hard is it to break into this sort of family work, particularly, say, being referred cases by the court system?
You know, I think that the first step would be, one, finding if you have the temperament for this work, because there it's high conflict. You're oftentimes having to work with attorneys, possibly judges, other therapists in the community, and sometimes when you're in the midst of the fire, you're sometimes the target. So it's having a little bit of a thick skin and being able to work in that kind of highly conflictual area and being able to communicate very well with attorneys is some of the, you know, really prerequisites for being able to work with these families. And then I would say really getting the education, finding somebody who's doing the work, maybe getting some consultation from that particular person and you know, getting the trainings, learning about the different associations associated with the professional groups working in the field. And then I think it's just knowing who to contact when and where and how. And again, that would be something you could really get from a consultant working in the area.
Well, Dana, this has been very informative. As we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to leave our audience with?
No, I just like to say it's always good to talk with you, David, and I really wish you the best. And tell me a little bit about shrink wrap.
Oh, I think I'll save that for after we get off the interview here, since the listeners probably already know about shrink wrap. So
okay.
Dana Schneider, thanks so much for being my guest on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Oh, you're welcome, David, and thank you so much for inviting me.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Dana Schneider. One of the things I valued about Dana as a colleague is that she is almost always very upbeat and enthusiastic, despite the tenuous employment situation that confronts our part-time lecturers in the California State University system, and I imagine it's probably similar elsewhere as well. From semester to semester, we never know whether there will be enough money in the kitty to hire them back. But Dana has bravely hung in there and served the department well over these many years, over and above her very active involvement in the community, which you heard about here. The author and book I was having trouble remembering is Dr. Amy Baker, who wrote Adult Children of Parental Alienation Syndrome, and whom I interviewed on Wise Counsel podcast some time back. Two other important books that Dana mentioned in the course of the interview were The Verbally Abusive Relationship by Patricia Evans and Hold Me Tight by Sue Johnson. To all you aspiring counselors and therapists, I think Dana offered some valuable advice in terms of developing a niche specialty. It's clear that this is one that has worked out very well for her, but it's not something she just jumped into. Her success clearly has been the result of a lot of specialized training, experience, and supervision as well.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head.
Tomorrow, I'm going down to San Francisco for several workshops at the Happiness and Its Causes Conference. You've already heard my interview with Dr. Philippe Golden, and I'm hoping I'll discover more good guests to bring your way as a result of my attendance. I want to thank Stuart in the UK, who in an email mentioned his desire to donate, but his concern about security. In part, Stuart wrote, "As a point, I have looked at your donate button and am nervous about internet donations." So a something that says secure, trust, tested a little louder will tip me over the edge. Going a little more commercial can't hurt, close quote. Okay, Stuart, well, this is me being louder, saying secure, trust, tested. Stuart, I appreciate your raising this issue because I imagine it may be on the minds of others as well. As soon as you click on one of our donate buttons, it does, in fact, take you to a secure site managed by PayPal. If you have a PayPal account, you can donate from your account, but you don't have to have a PayPal account. The site will happily accept your credit card. Now, I myself have used PayPal for years to buy and sell all sorts of stuff on the internet, and I've never had a single problem with it. Also, before going down this path, I checked with several friends who have PayPal merchant accounts to see if they or their customers had experienced any problems with PayPal. There were no complaints. When you click on the donate button and then choose an amount to donate, it takes you to an HTTPS page on the PayPal server, which has the following security and privacy statement. Is PayPal safe to use? PayPal protects your financial information with industry-leading security and fraud prevention systems. When you use PayPal, your financial information is not shared with the merchant. Once your payment is complete, you will be emailed a receipt for this transaction. End of quote. So, Stuart, and any others of you who are sitting on the fence because of privacy or security concerns, I hope this is enough to tip you over into making a donation. And, of course, you do not have to be in the U.S. We can receive donations from all over the world. Now, I'm happy to report that so far we've received donations from 11 listeners, and each of them have my hearty thanks. At the same time, I think there are at least 4,000 of you out there listening. So all the rest of you, please consider the fact that you have access to 184 shows currently, most with typed transcripts, not to mention all the material I hope to keep producing.
I'm Jack Ward from thesonicsociety.org, and it's not all in your mind yet. We're back with Shrink Wrap Radio and Dr. Dave.
Thanks, Jack, for that beautiful transition. Now, here are some of your recent listener emails. I wrote to thank listener Rick V for his donation to help support Shrink Wrap Radio, and he wrote back saying, "Hey Dave, you're welcome. I would give more and on a monthly basis, but I am a lowly student with a lowly income. I never know how I'm getting past the next day, much less the next month. It is my honor to show you in a tangible way that I appreciate what you're doing. There are lots of people like me out there who listen and feel the same as I do, and I hope they express their appreciation in a concrete way as well. I have also been doing all I can to find new devotees so you can rule the world." He writes, I like that term, devotees. Dave votees, get it? It works well in writing. I don't know if it comes across when I say it. Just kidding, of course, he says. Now I wish you would have good old Doug Davis back on the show. I've listened to the Happy Birthday Dr. Freud and the Jung Letters shows probably around 5 times each because they are so packed with interesting nuggets that I can squirrel away for use in my own life or just for fun conversation. I always feel so much smarter after listening to those 2 shows. That's all for now. Sincerely, Rick V. Well, I have mentioned it to Doug, Rick, and he's open to it, although he says he doesn't know, you know, what he could add to what he already said, in particular about the Freud-Jung letters, but he is such a treasure trove, certainly one of the most brilliant people it's ever been my good fortune to know. So thanks for that suggestion as well as for your contribution, especially considering your financial status. Next, we hear from Giovanni in Texas who writes, "Dear Dr. Dave, your programs have been a lifesaver for me and I think for others that I'm in contact with. Your guests are fantastic and I worry that you might become addicted to talking to incredible people." I would. Well, you're right. I think maybe I am getting addicted to that. He goes on to say, "Is there a good listserv discussion forum where people talk about the kinds of topics you cover? I have an idea for a show. How about one on impulse control disorder? Many thanks, Giovanni." Well, Giovanni, I've thought about making a forum, you know, that would be attached to this show, but I haven't felt I had the time or energy to moderate it. I'm hoping that maybe some other psychologist will come forward who's a big enough fan and's got some time to kind of say, hey, I'd be interested in moderating and keeping track of a discussion group like that. Now, I know there are many, many, many blogs, et cetera, on psychology out there. I don't have a good one to suggest to you because I'm so busy creating my own content here that I'm afraid I am ignoring other people's content. So maybe some listeners will have some good suggestions, and I'll put those on the air, or else maybe drop you an email. And I think your suggestion about a show on impulse control is a good one. However, I would also point out that I've done shows both here and on Wise Counsel podcast about various forms of addiction. And so that might tend to fall under that category. And there's also a very important show I did here on Shrink Wrap Radio on psychopaths with a major author whose name I'm blocking on. But look for a show about psychopathology, and I think that's the one that I have in mind. It's something like Snakes in Suits is the title that comes to mind, or the subtitle. And there's more than one way to contribute to the show. Listener Jamie Johnson purchased one of the links on our Top Spots widget on the Shrink Wrap Radio website, and she wrote to say, "Hi, Dr. Dave. This is my long overdue thank you for so many wonderful podcasts. My daughter, Erin, who lives in Brooklyn, was the one who encouraged me to start listening to you. I listen while I paint, as I'm an artist, or you will soon find out, a former artist. Your show keeps me in my studio, glued to my seat. The more I listen to your shows, I've been listening for over a year now, the more I became interested in hypnosis. I even write about the show with Rabbi Emanuel Yosef Ligomski on my website, jamiejohnsonconsultinghypnotist.com, under the Emotional Freedom Technique section. Please excuse the low-resolution videos." You know what? I couldn't find the videos on your website. I looked for them, but I couldn't find them. He says, "It's on my to-do list to refilm those. So as you can see, I'm now a certified hypnotist using EFT, breathwork, and meditation in my practice. I bought an ad on your top 10 widget today. Thank you again so much for all your heartfelt interviews. You're the best, Jamie Johnson." And again, I encourage you to visit her website. It's really a very lovely site and really nice feeling about it. And you'll find it at www.jamie, that's J-A-M-I-E, Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N, consultinghypnotist.com. Moving along. "Dear Dr. Dave, I also host my own podcast, a mere 15-minute show every 4 weeks. The amount of work needed to make even that short presentation is many times greater than the length of each episode, so I can't imagine how you manage to create Shrink Wrap Radio, let alone Wise Counsel. I have just sent my first donation. It is a one-off, but that doesn't mean it will be my last. Thank you so much for broadening my knowledge of psychology and being one of the warmest, friendliest recorded voices on air. Yours sincerely, Heather." And that's from Northamptonshire, England. Now, Heather put in a link to her podcast, which I've just subscribed to. I've listened to a bit of it, and I encourage, you know, I take a risk anytime I recommend somebody else's podcast. After all, you only have so much listening time. But I think this is worth a listen. The name of her podcast, and you can get it on iTunes. Just do a search in iTunes for SNR hyphen The Naked Soul. And I took a listen and discovered that SNR, I was totally mystified by that until I listened. SNR stands for Spiritual, Not Religious. Hey, that's something I can identify with. And she has an incredible voice and the diction of a professional. Hers is a very intelligent discussion of existential questions for people who might consider themselves agnostic. You go, Heather. And the next one reads, "Hi, Dr. Dave, I just made a donation to keep your podcast coming. I am new to Shrink Wrap Radio just this month. I found you when one of my other favorite online guys, Dr. James Wanless, included a reference in his newsletter to your podcast interview of him. I went to your website to retrieve that podcast and was immediately intrigued by some of the other titles. Now, I'm so glad he put that link there. I always encourage my interviewees to do that. And of course, I'm hoping that this very thing will happen, that somebody new will discover the show. Okay, the listener goes on to say, I then subscribed through iTunes and started downloading. Wow, what a broad range of interesting and provocative discussions. I particularly enjoyed the New Millennials discussion and the Toltec Wisdom teachings with Alan Hardman. To let you know how obsessed I've become, since I am limited to dial-up where I live, downloading 25 to 30 megabytes can often take 2 to 3 hours, even with a fast modem. I've taken to driving to my local library where the access is somewhat faster, 12 minutes per episode versus 3 hours. The 45-minute round trips plus time spent at the library waiting and then at home listening to the podcast has cut my time for doing household chores and cooking dinner. I've fallen behind. This is not going over well. I hope you have some couples therapy podcasts. I'll need them soon. Yeah, I just did one, as a matter of fact. Seriously, you are doing a great job, and I appreciate the time and work you put into what you're doing. And I also appreciate all the great people who've participated in the interviews. My reading list is growing. Good thing I'm going to the library a lot, huh? Thanks again, and keep them coming. Ellen. Well, Ellen, first of all, Ellen, you are a super fan, a stellar fan, a first person I've heard of who's actually taking the time and effort to download these podcasts over dial-up. You are my heroine. And it reminded me that some time back, I created a bunch of CDs for sale, did not have much luck selling them. And so I let Ellen know, and I'm going to let the rest of you know, that if you're at all interested in purchasing some of the back shows to save yourself some time, I have 3 CDs. Each one contains 25 episodes. So I have the first 75 episodes on CDs. I'm asking $20 per episode if you live in the U.S. If you live outside the U.S., I might have to add a bit more for postage. So if you're interested, let me know. And here's another one. Let's read one last one here. Hi, Dr. Dave. I've really enjoyed a great number of your episodes, especially those with a psychoanalytic bent. I greatly appreciate your open-mindedness toward Freud, which, as you know, is rather rare these days. I have to say, though, that I'm still eagerly awaiting an interview with a Lacanian psychoanalyst. About half of the world's analysts are practicing Lacanians, and with, and she gives a URL here, http://lacanschool.org in your neck of the woods. I'm surprised I haven't heard an episode dedicated to his theories and clinical application. Have you tried contacting any Lacanians for an interview? Best, and keep up the good work. And that's from Dione in Boston. Well, that's an excellent suggestion, Dione. You know, I have not been able to get into Lacan myself. I believe he's a French psychoanalyst and not used to that continental writing style. It's pretty deep stuff. I've heard people talk about it, and it felt a little forbidding. But and I didn't know that we had a Lacanian Institute in Berkeley, which is not far from where I am. So I intend to follow up on that, and we'll all get better educated about it together. So I think that better wrap it up for today. You can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio. You can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype where the name is ShrinkPod. You can leave voice messages using my Chingo, using the mic in your computer. And you can leave messages on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks again to my longtime friend and colleague, Dana Schneider, for sharing her work with families and the court system. Next week's guest will be Dr. Kathy Greenberg, co-author of the book, What Happy Women Know. Until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, It's all in your mind.